How's it going, everybody? Andrew Zarian here, Wrestling Observer Live on a spooky edition, Halloween Eve. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. on Saturdays with Jim Valley, and Sundays, 6 p.m. with me. Happy Halloween. I guess I'll say it now. Happy Halloween, everybody. My entire weekend is slammed with macabre events for my children. Party after party. Started on Friday night, is continuing every day. I never knew Halloween extended into a three-day weekend. But you know what? Everybody's having fun. It's a great weekend to have, especially the weather here on the Northeast. It's stunning out. So perfect Halloween weekend here in New York. But we do have a lot of wrestling to talk about. Obviously, the big story here, CM Punk, likely done with AEW. The buyout could be completed, close to complete. We're going to talk about that. They've had a lot of information in this week's Observer. Highly recommend you go read it. We also, on Wednesday, got glimpse and little previews of what's happening with Kenny Omega and the Bucks, and it looks like they are returning any week now. Next week, the following week, I expect them to be there for the pay-per-view. That show's also almost sold out, so we're going to talk about that. Shinsuke Nakamura facing the great Muta in Japan for Noah in January. This is a big, big move. And also, this is the first time something like this has happened in a long time for WWE. So I want to get everybody's thoughts on that. Crown Jewel preview, Roman Reigns, Logan Paul, Jake Paul last night won against Anderson Silva. I want to get Matt Ryan's opinion on that. He's an MMA expert. He's going to be joining me after this segment on the show. He's at least here about two or three times a month with me. It's easy for me when Matt's here. But we have all this and a whole lot more to talk about here on Wrestling Observer Live, Sunday edition, spooky edition. Join us right after this on Sports Byline. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live, Andrew Zarian here on a Sunday edition, joined by Matt Ryan of Catalyst Wrestling. What's going on, Matt?
Nothing much, friend. Happy Halloween to you.
Yeah, listen, you also do more than Catalyst, right? You do more than Catalyst. You do some MMA coverage. Where else are you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Matt Ryan Yells. You can find me every month on SB Nation's Combat Culture YouTube channel calling the UFC fights. You can find me a litany of places also on the A7FL 3-on-1 podcast for the American Sevens Football League. It's if the UFC ran a football league, no pads, no helmets, all action. You can check me out there and also buy tickets, CatalystWrestling.com. And also our new VOD site, StreamCatalystWrestling.com. Matches featuring MJF, Nyla Rose, Anthony Bowens, and more. And also Andrew Zarian shows up sometimes.
Andrew Zarian does show up sometimes. Once in a while, you'll get a wild Andrew spotting at a Catalyst Wrestling show. I want to go dive deep into this now. Dave, on this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter, been a subscriber, I think, almost 18 years, 20 years? Man, almost 20. Well, no, it has to be over 20 years. Man, you know, I'm getting old, and I'm feeling it every single day. Dave, this week in The Observer, had summer information about CM Punk and the status and what's going on here. And I find this to be fascinating stuff. Nothing really out of the ordinary. I think we all could assume that he's likely finished with the company, but there were some tidbits here. One being, a lot of top names did not want to work with him due to, I guess, relationships in the past and everything that's been going on in AEW. Chris Jericho even calling him a cancer in the locker room at one point. It is amazing how Chris Jericho has kind of taken this locker room leader position over the last couple months and turned it into a management position of sorts. But on Wednesday, Wrestling Gang's Nick Houseman, you know Nick, I know Nick.
Yeah,
Nick got yelled at by Punk in that scrum, but I know Nick outside of that. You know, I've known him for years from his coverage at Wrestling Inc.
I met him while he was producing Eric Bischoff's podcast like a million years ago.
Yeah. Nick Houseman reported that those from Punk's camp, and this is fascinating to me, okay? This is the latest new piece of information here. Punk's camp said, and again, this is according to Nick Houseman, that Larry was injured during the backstage altercation, and Larry had to have two teeth removed. I guess the story was, and tell me if I'm wrong here, and Matt, MG, our producer, he could correct me if I'm wrong, because the last 2 days have been a blur to me. Was the report that when they kicked, and I'm using hand quotes here, when they kicked the door open, it hit Larry the dog and caused injury?
Listen, yeah, that's what's being reported.
I never heard any of this, okay? Never once, on the record or off the record, was I said anything. And listen, by the way, everybody's told stuff off the record, right? And a lot of times, a lot of this stuff, you really can't verify, or I never heard any of this. This is one of those scenarios that everything that was said was reported. If yeah. this was mentioned at all to anybody while this altercation was happening, or the days after this, where we got all this information to come out, I think this would have been, I mean, to many, a game changer as far as Punk's reaction to things. If my dog, mm-hmm. if I'm sitting in a locker room, and no matter, listen, he was already hot, right? He was already going nuts in that scrum. If somebody kicked my door open and it hit my dog in the face, and my dog was obviously in distress and pain, and he's bleeding, he lost a tooth, you know what? I may react the same way. I don't know. I would hope that I don't, that I would be able to control how I feel, but my dog's my dog.
Yeah, no, if that happened to my dog, I would see red.
I would definitely see red, yeah.
Someone may be on alive after that, because if it's an accident, I'd try to calm down, but I'm very protective of my dog, especially when we're out walking. She's also her own worst enemy. She's very sweet, but very stupid. Much
I mean,
like myself.
Nobody. This is the thing. You know, you are a sweet boy. I don't know about stupid, but you are a sweet boy. I don't know, man. I would be. Dave said he never heard this. Sean, I believe, also said for the last 6 weeks or so, whatever the time period was for this, he never
also,
heard a word about
in this. In this situation, and the truth lies somewhere in the middle of all these stories, because perspective, what's going on, what people see and what people want to say is varied, and it creates this, we're in this mishigas right now. I don't think anybody on the AEW side or on the Elite side, there's like 87 different sides of this. It's like the Trivial Pursuit board.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody on that side would want to say, yeah, a dog got hurt.
Yes, of course.
Like if Dave and Sean's sources were in those camps, because it seems like Nick's report is the first time we've heard anything from the Punk side, at least reported, it would behoove everybody on that side to not mention the fact that the dog that has been universally loved and celebrated got hit with a door.
Listen,
because they were charging it.
I also spoke to people that are somewhat on the Punk side of things after this happened. I never heard anything about a dog. I was reached out by a bunch of people. People that in WWE that very much like Punk. People in AEW. You know, I don't know. I'm very surprised by this coming out at, you know, 0 hour, essentially, when the determination has been made, unless there was some sort of gag order where nobody could talk, nobody could bring out facts. There's a lot here, and something like that.
It also could be just trying to create a parachute.
It could
for,
be. Yeah.
For Punk on the way out, just try to give him some of the higher ground. I don't think Punk would lie about his dog. I feel like he would try, if his camp, I don't know who it is in his camp, it could be a steal, it could be, you know, just random human being, it could be.
But there were a ton
of people
in that room, and that's yeah. kind of the point, right? We're not talking about just two people in a room fighting and the dog was, you know, there too. There were, I mean, But when it took, it didn't just happen after 30 seconds. This was going on for a while.
Yeah, it feels like Montreal. Like, all of this stuff know, feels like crazy. AEW's Montreal, and the anniversary's next week. But it is like how this story has turned into the biggest thing in wrestling.
Yeah,
and much
and
like Montreal. And it completely has cast a shadow over one of AEW's best events, coming on a hot run of TV, and also at the same time, the WWE quality and consistency-wise is meeting them on the A show. We all know SmackDown was doing well, but Raw's the elder statesman. It's about to enter its 30th year, and Raw's starting to turn the tide. Some weeks it's great, some weeks it's just okay, but it hasn't been abysmal in, you know, since the changeover,
hasn't.
SummerSlam.
No,
but
it hasn't.
For
sorry, go ahead.
Andrew, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
we're both in marketing. We're both in, you know, the world of social media and public relations. If you're given the yes, unfortunately, I'd much rather be doing this and eating sandwiches. But for you, if you were called on a Monday, on Monday morning, the day after this happens, or 2 days after this happens, and you're asked, we'll give you seven figures for a year. You have to come in and manage this situation and find us a way out. Because the WWE, over the last 25 years, have built one of the best organizations in entertainment in terms of business structure.
Yes.
They have PR people. They have all these things. AEW is much like the WWE at the start of the national expansion, because you've got a lot of old, you know, you got a lot of wrestlers in power positions. You have a lot of people who are lifers in the industry in key positions. And then there's some people with executive experience, but a lot of that's on the Jaguar side of AEW.
Yeah.
There's, I don't know the level of within all these things where they have non-wrestling people handling some of these key positions, but if you were brought in, how would you attack this?
This specific issue?
Yeah.
Oh, it's an optics battle for sure. Listen, I think Tony's in a very difficult position. We're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes, but I do want to talk about this. I want to continue this because Tony's, you know, it really comes down to what Tony's going to do. And I, like you said, some of this is just growing pains of a new company. And no matter how many things you put in place ahead of this, you are going to experience these problems because you never have dealt with it before. And I think this is what Tony is learning with, you know, having a locker room of lunatics. It's a crazy business. You know this firsthand. I know this. I'm around enough people in pro wrestling to know what an insane industry this is. And it's not a team game. It's an individual game. And when that happens, people's egos come into play. Financials come into play. You know, all this goes on.
I think I've got a comp. I've got a direct comp for it.
Okay. Listen, hold
that
thought.
It's the 77 Yankees.
It's the 77 Yankees. Where's Thurman? Where's Thurman? Guys, we're going to go to a quick
Mox
break.
Mox is Thurman Munson.
Mox is Thurman Munson. We're going to go to a quick break. Wrestling Observer Live Sunday edition here on Sports Byline. Stay tuned. Wrestling Observer Live Sunday edition here on Halloween Eve. What do you call it? You call it Hallows Eve?
I call it Sunday because I'm
What do we call it in New York?
I think it's called Devil's Night or Devil's Mischief Night.
Mischief Night, Devil's Night, and Hallows Eve. I think depending on where you are, it's one or the other. I don't know. We never had this growing up.
No, but New York like
City?
In Brooklyn, no.
It's Halloween every day, dude. It's Halloween every day in Brooklyn.
I was in Manhattan last night at Carnegie Hall to watch Weird Al Yankovic perform his original songs at a sold-out Carnegie Hall. Unbelievable concert experience. And the mix of people dressed up as Weird Al and the people meandering around Midtown Manhattan in Halloween regalia. I was just surprised none of them were any of the Times Square performers or trying to act like it for the tourists to try to get some tip money. Like, that's the easiest con now.
No, too scary, man. You might get shot over there. Even though they did put up signs saying no guns in Times Square. You know, that's going to stop everything. We were talking about the CM Punk story, but I thought it deserves some more time here because another piece of the puzzle is that there was a promo, a vignette for the Elite that aired during Dynamite, where it shows the Elite in their, you know, major pivotal moments in the company, and they're just disappearing. Thanos snapped his fingers and they are disintegrating and disappearing. It also came out that the Elite were backstage at Dynamite, getting ready for that return. You know, oh man, if they could have only made money with this.
So millions of dollars. Millions of dollars left off the
table. Kenny Omega and CM Punk dream match would have been, I mean, something. Listen, never say never. You know,
you had blood and guts ready. You had like your next 6 months off of this incident, which is why initially I thought it was a work, because this was leading in the full gear. And I thought with Kenny and all them coming back, it would be this huge bridging storyline, including MJF and the poker chip, leading into full gear, leading in the revolution, and, you know, the big shows of 2023.
You're saying when he lost his mind in the scrum, not after the fight.
Yeah, I thought with the fight too, because it just felt so out of body. It felt like an out of body experience because you know about locker room fights have happened. These things happen. Pro wrestling is a bunch of alpha male or alpha male-esque individuals all competing for the same spot, competing for airtime, competing for all these things, all within the constraints of traveling, living on the road, doing all these things. It's bound to happen. Like, it is a thing that is going to happen in that specific style of workplace. We see it in all combat sports, honestly. It's weird that this one went the way it did, because the way the beats of it all felt, it felt like something that was worked.
Oh, of course.
But as we get deeper into it.
Yeah, but we're going in this mentality where, like, these are professionals, right? These are very much, they all know the importance of what they are doing today for tomorrow. The first thing that, you know, like this whole thing about how people don't want to work with Punk, I could tell you, I spoke to a couple guys on that roster, younger side, and the way they took it was, listen, it's not about Punk, it's not about the Bucks, it's not about Kenny, but all of those individuals know the importance for the business, for this to work, so we don't look like fools. And a lot of the younger talent said, well, we suffered the most from this. No one else. Because these guys are still going to make millions of dollars if something were to happen. You know, they would still be in a position of power and whatever, wherever they go, whatever they do. But, you know, when you start, these things start happening, who suffers? That mid-card, the lower end of the card, the young guys in the business that now are on a ship that people see as not the place to be.
And I think that this has turned into a gigantic recruiting tool for the WWE.
Because, tell me about it.
Because for all the WWE's faults, you know, just as a company, the big thing is they kind of have a decent amount of control on keeping stuff like this from happening. And they know, they try to conduct business in that way. But it also, that comes with a heavy competitive advantage. Because the WWE has the institutions in place, and a lot of startup companies, and we've seen it from Impact all the way on down, don't have the same systems in place because they haven't been around as long.
Yeah.
And when you're in the business, you may not see what the other side of the business looks like. So when you're starting a company, some of these things just might completely miss your brain, or you don't budget for it, or you hire people who you think can handle the role. But this is unlike anything. Like, being an HR person in pro wrestling has to be the most annoying job, like one of the most annoying jobs in America that isn't manual labor.
Yeah, I would imagine it's a constant barrage of issues. So now what? What do you do now? The Elite, they're back. Kenny Omega's back. You know, obviously, the Bucks are back. Adam Cole, hopefully he's back. So you have four guys there. You have that story of that trios title that they never even got a chance to defend. So I guess you could go back to that and do that trios title. But I think now, you know, what do you do?
I think the initial plan for the trios title was supposed to be the Elite against, you know, the Undisputed Elite or whatever they were going to end up calling
that's,
them.
That's gone.
Yeah, because Cole got hurt, O'Reilly had surgery, and Bobby Fish is in the Impact Zone now.
Yes.
We talked about butterfly effects on the show when we did the extra about it last week. This is that butterfly effect. It cascaded across the entire business, but it also directly broke about 15 different things AEW was trying to do. And it's great that their ratings haven't really suffered for it. They've been still top five, fighting against NBA programming, the MLB playoffs, having to be moved around on their schedule.
They're sitting at that million mark, regardless. It doesn't matter if it's a little shy or a little above. They're at that million mark consistently every week.
Yeah. And let's think about it for a second. The world of wrestling television and the world of television and content has completely changed. So getting a million viewers is a high watermark for a startup, despite the star power, despite all of that. Because let's remember, Impact on Spike did good numbers, but when it was starting, but it's completely drained down. And they also were on Fox Sportsnet for a few years. They were around for a while.
Do you remember? I can't remember, and I'll ask Dave this or Brian. I don't remember if those ratings, like those spike numbers that they were doing, was looked at as a positive. Because the WWE numbers were in the 3 million range at that point, right? We're going back to the Spike era when they left Spike and they went to USA. I can't remember now, but I'm sure someone's going to be able to tell us this. I don't ever remember people saying, like, my gosh, look how great these Impact numbers are.
And with the benefit of hindsight, they were great numbers.
And the benefit of hindsight, they were fantastic numbers. But they also, Impact also suffered, or TNA, they really did suffer from the anti, like, it was almost like this very much this anti-WCW thing was starting up again with TNA. I think there were people that would never give it a chance.
Yeah, and I think what hurt TNA was all the same problems that hurt WCW.
Yeah, absolutely.
And almost started to completely cripple the WWE this year. Heavy reliance on guys from the past, trying to pull in the quote-unquote casual fan, which is a big, you know, it's a big thing when it's WrestleMania season or SummerSlam season when you're trying to draw big houses and big ratings. But to curate fans who know of wrestling or the indie wrestling fan or the people who watch your competitor, oversaturating it with guys from the 80s and 90s when it's 2009, 2010 doesn't hurt, is going to cripple you. And also, it was unfair competition because they were trying to prop themselves up as the WWE's competitor.
Yeah.
At a time where they were untouchable because they had just gone through all of this.
Yeah.
And what Listen, really no matter hurt how many times you told was people, the move to Monday.
There were a number of issues that I had with Impact, even when I thought it was great, when it was really, really good. You know, there was a time frame that I very much enjoyed TNA, the early days of those penny pay-per-views. It was something very different. You know, they were offering you, it was kind of nostalgia because you had guys that you recognized, but you also had great talent like AJ Styles and, you know, later on. But you had unbelievable talent with that X division. However, I can never get past two things that they did. One, the Impact Zone. Every week, it was too static. And it's almost the same problem that I've had with NXT in the past, where it's too static. And two, that ring.
I didn't hate the six-sided ring.
I never liked the six-sided ring. And I know there are people that love the six-sided ring. I'm not convincing you or will attempt to convince you that why you shouldn't like it. That's great for you. It just, I couldn't get behind it because you had guys like Kevin Nash in that ring or Sting in this tiny little ring.
It was jarring.
Yeah, it was the same problem that WCW
was
in.
It wasn't tiny.
Tiny.
I think it was a 20-footer.
I think it was
a 20-footer.
I don't think so. Impossible. That thing was like 8 feet by 8 feet. No, it's not. I'm joking. 8 by 8 by 8 by 8 by 8 by 8 by 8. It didn't do it for me. But I'm not telling you it had great moments, but was a million, yeah. 2 million, 3 million really good ratings at that time? I don't know. I don't remember.
When you're adjusting for the time period, not really, but you also have to look at the fact that it was on Spike, which at that time kind of was in a weird place where it was just like Cops or Reruns, the UFC.
Or UFC, yeah.
And Impact. That was pretty much it. Yeah. So there wasn't really a lot of programming there. And also they were fighting against the fact that they were replacing the brand leader in the industry. I think we look at competition in this business and don't see the fact, and we could talk more about this after the break, about how we don't temper our expectations for these different companies,
yeah,
because all we're doing is having them as WWE trying to beat the WWE like they're WCW.
Guys, we're going to be back right after this on Sports Byline, Wrestling Observer Sunday Edition. Stay tuned. Wrestling Observer Live Sunday Edition. A lot to talk about still on the show. Man, that CM Punk stuff took over, but we do have a lot to talk about. One big story here that came out this morning. Shinsuke Nakamura is facing the Great Muta at Noah's show, Noah the New Year 2023. Is that the name? Noah the New Year. Yes, the new year, 2023.
Well, so, it is the new year.
That is a new year. Correct. It is the new year. This is taking place on New Year's Day in Japan. You're getting Nakamura and Muda. This is very cool. I'm very into this.
I'm so hyped for this because Muda, one of my favorite wrestlers.
Yeah.
And Nakamura over the last 7 years, when I first saw him when I was working at Ring of Honor, live in the Manhattan Center. I was ringside for that. I was the timekeeper that night. And it was just like, yep, he's the best wrestler on the planet now. I can't, like, he was revelatory.
Yeah, big time. And
that, you can see the influences Muda had on Nakamura. I believe they had a prior relationship when they were in New Japan. I believe they were both Antonio Inoki's pallbearers for when he passed away for his funeral. But this is interesting that the WWE, for the first time since, what, Michinoku Pro in the late 90s when Taker went over to face Shinsei Shinzaki? Like, is this the first time since that? Like,
that's a great question.
Having that relationship?
Okay, let's think about this. When is the last time a WWE talent went over to another company to wrestle? Let's start off with that.
Well, outside of ECW, you know, McMahon did that indie spot. We're in Chaotic.
At John Cena's father's promotion?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
Manager there at the time.
But let's go something that aired, something with high production value. Let's go there.
I think it's Taker Shinsei Shinzaki. I think it's that. It's,
and then if
from
you add
like
ECW,
97,
it has to be 2001.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, this is pretty cool. You know, this is a great sign of change in that company. But here's what I'm seeing. Okay, what does this mean? Does Muda come over? One for you, one for me.
I don't know about that because that might. I think that might be the Hall of Fame might be the play because remember Sting's in Muda's last match.
Sting is in Muda's last match. Yeah.
Yes, that it's going to be a tag of some sort. I feel like, and there were rumors when NXT Japan was the thing.
Oh yeah.
That Muda and Noah were going to be a part of it.
Well, NXT. Well, wasn't. Yeah, that was kind of the rumor, right? And you and I had spoken about this years ago, that there were people that I believe were brought into WWE to kind of bridge this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to someone at WWE, and they mentioned years ago, I mean, this is, I gotta go back and read these messages, but essentially, it was never going to be sold to WWE, but they were kind of using them as a tool to get a better deal for a sale. I don't know how accurate that is. That was said a couple times to me, but you know, it just shows that there is some sort of relationship between these two. You know, it kind of continues that. And the fact that you have Nakamura going to face Muda in one of his final matches says a lot, but I do think that this will expand into the Hall of, you know, something.
Yeah, Muda deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. It would be interesting to see what happens. Like, there's a litany of guys who never stepped into a WWE ring that belong in that Hall of Fame. Muda's at the top of the list. Well, near the top of the list, because there's a bunch
of never say never. Why not? Why not have him show up on a Raw or a SmackDown?
Because that might screw up the relationship AEW has with Noah, because they have a working relationship, it seems now. Because of the Muda match with Sting being involved, Muda appearing at Grand Slam. And wrestling politics are dumb. They're very dumb, and they're antithetical to the business because the business is built on cooperation. But when the biggest organization for the first half century of the business was run like a crime syndicate, there's a lot of mistrust and a lot of skullduggery. Yeah. So it does necessitate a lot of mistrust and the idea of competition but not competition. And I feel like this would be the best for everybody involved. And also, it is weird seeing the WWE take a globalist approach to wrestling after being isolationist for so long.
They really have been. They've been living on their own little island for a long time, and now they're opening that up. They tried. Listen, Hunt, that's always been Hunter's thing. That was the whole expansion with, you know, Progress and Evolve and everything else that they were doing. There was a whole point to this. They wanted to expand, yeah, and it didn't happen. The pandemic obviously played a big part. The shift in NXT played a big part. You know, the main roster not being fed the guys that Vince wanted played a big part in this. But, you know, they're kind of going backwards a little bit positively. This is a good change. Also, talking about change. Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quickly, back in the territory days or back in the 90s when you sent guys to, you know, Memphis or you sent them to different territories when the WWF had that relationship with New Japan, you were able to send guys away, have them refresh, work a different schedule. They make good money. They come back. This is a great way to rehab and retool guys. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it just creates fresh matchups and fresh opportunities, and it's good for everybody in the long term.
Yeah. Ring of Honor final battle is set for December 10th. It's a 4 p.m. PLE or pay-per-view. It is a pay-per-view. You could order this on pay-per-view. It's a 4 p.m. show. The next day...
There's going to be so many people mad that you said that.
I know. It is. I mean, technically it is. You get it on Fight. That's a PLE. Same day as NXT, UFC 292, and the Heisman Trophy presentation. So they have a lot of competition.
Yeah, them running it for so smart.
Yeah.
Because that UFC card in December is loaded.
It is loaded. That is a loaded UFC card. So this is interesting, but I expect them to announce the TV deal here. This is when you do it, right? This is the final show for the year. This is the final battle of this old Ring of Honor, I guess you could say, pre-TV. You're going to have, you know, you're going in there loaded for sure when they get this television deal or whatever you want to call it, if it's a streaming deal or television deal. This is a very important time for Ring of Honor, but also for AEW, because this is going to be their feeder system.
Yeah.
You know, a feeder system is required. You need to cultivate TV talent, not guys wrestling on Dark or Dark Elevation. You need people in front of, you know, 500,000 people a week to kind of work and see what's working and what's not for you. And this is going to be a good system for them to bring up talent, you know, get a guy over in Ring of Honor, make him this big deal. Oh my gosh, can you believe it? If he faces him or this one faces that, it's the same effect that NXT had with Kevin Owens showing up and confronting John Cena. You're going to get those moments, also, and I think it's going to be important for them.
Yeah, when you're battling of 3 hours of television a week, traditional television a week, and you have Dark and Dark Elevation where some of the matches, I think the average match time is 3.5 minutes. It doesn't really help those guys, but I would like to see more enhancement matches if Ring of Honor does come back in some form, and I think it's going to be on a streamer. I don't think it's going to be on traditional television. I think Ring of Honor is going to be on a digital platform. I have absolutely no idea where,
yeah,
but I think an HBO Max or even an outside player in the space, I think it might come from outside the Warner Media family, because they're just looking for the best deal. But
listen, there is rumors that some of these streaming providers are looking for partners, right? I don't know if you've heard the same thing, but some of these, there's multitude of them, right? There's Fight, obviously, which is wrestling inundated. Big part of their business.
I don't think it's
going to
be
wrestling.
Fight.
You got The Zone, which is heavy in boxing and odd MMA promotions, but the reality is they don't have any wrestling on The Zone. And
that's always been strange to me. Felt like that was a hand in glove kind of thing.
Yeah, but remember the problems with DAZN. When they initially started, it was the whole Canelo thing, right? And they dumped so much money in boxing that for the exclusivity, they really didn't have much of a budget to work with. But I mean, they're still around. They're still promoting. They're still. DAZN is a destination for a lot of this boxing.
Yeah, and also they have NFL rights internationally. They have European football rights. Like, there's a lot there.
So I mean, that's
a package. And if
I don't know if that's a reality for them, I mean, it could be, but you know, there is rumbling.
Fight. Yeah, I think it's going to be if it's going to be a non-traditional sports partner. It's not going to be Disney or anything like that.
No,
but with the way things are going right now, Ring of Honor has the chance to do a unique looking show, a unique looking product, and create that feeder system that is needed for AEW and to create situations where you can develop dream matches and turn a final battle or something into an annual cross promotion pay-per-view and pick up the bag that was fumbled by Jim Crockett Promotions, that was fumbled by the WWE, that was fumbled by everybody else who bought a company and merged it and completely jobbed out the other side because they lost, ha ha ha, LOL, you job now.
Yeah, so that, I'm very curious to see where this goes. Very curious. Crown Jewel from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So far, the card. Brock versus Bobby Lashley, undisputed WWE World Universal Heavyweight Champion of the Universe, Roman Reigns and Logan Paul. By the way, Jake Paul won. He beat Anderson Silva.
Yeah. A 25-year-old beat a 47-year-old in the sport he's rarely competed in professionally.
People are very excited for that, right? The OC versus Judgment Day, Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross in a steel cage match, Braun Strowman, Omos, undisputed tag team champions, the Usos and the Brawling Brutes, Raw Women's Champion Bianca Belair and Bayley so far for this card. Maybe they're going to announce some more stuff here, but this card doesn't look terrible. I'm interested to see what they do
here. No, it looks like a fun card. I want to see what Logan Paul does against Roman Reigns.
Yeah, me too, man.
That would be the reason why I'm watching this, because I want to see what happens when you put the biggest name in our business against this guy, and he's going to have to bring it. And I know he's been training with Shawn Michaels down at the Performance Center. He's been putting in the work, but this isn't a tag team match. This isn't working, and this is not a slide at the Miz. This is a main event for the biggest title in the sport, depending on who you talk to.
Absolutely.
Against the hottest guy in the business.
Absolutely. Wrestling Observer Live here on Sports Byline. We'll be right back after this. Wrestling Observer Live, final few minutes of the show here on Sports Byline. Wanted to touch on a couple things here. New Japan Rumble on 44th Street results. This was a packed show. A lot of people were very excited for this. Jay White and Juice Robinson defeated Okada and Eddie Kingston. Just some of the matches here. Did you watch any of this? You follow any of this?
I was papering outside. I was flyering outside the Palladium, which used to be the Sony Theater. That thing has changed names more times than a Washington football team the last few years.
Yes, it has. But yeah.
Some people I know got opportunities on that show. It was a great card on paper. Shout out to Homicide, who you can see next Sunday at Catalyst Wrestling. But it was a great card, and it's awesome to see New Japan run these interesting venues in Midtown.
Yeah, I mean, that, it is wild that they ran. I wonder how many suits were in that crowd. You know, you go to a Midtown event, it's all guys in suits.
It's normally right near the theater where the Lion King is. It was an interesting cross-section of humans walking down to Broadway.
Yes, it was. We also got a fascinating moment with Minoru Suzuki and Ken Shamrock.
Yeah.
At the end, they did a little thing together. Very cool. Pancras champions. I've held that belt.
And how heavy is that belt?
Very heavy. My wife honestly thought for the longest time it said King of Pancakes. So whenever we would go to Boss's gym, she's like, why does this guy? She's like, what is that King of Pancakes title? I'm like, no, it's King of Pancras. She's like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it was like, and I explained. I tried to explain it. She walked away.
Just sit down. We're gonna watch these fights that may have been fake or may have been real, and you're gonna love every one of them.
Don't question anything, but I love every single one of these fights. Don't question a thing. That belt is made out of the heaviest metals of this planet. I swear to God. It's on a wall. The wall is coming down around it. So very interesting stuff. Guys, that's it for this week. We're out of time. We'll be back next week on Wrestling Observer Live. See you next time.